Welcome, everybody, to this week's edition of Sports Odds and Ends, your sports show for the fly-by-night sports fan. I am one of your hosts, Jay Veazey. I'm joined by my good friend and the greatest co-host in the world, King Kaz.
What is up, my guy?
I feel like we're really back into the full swing of things. I basically spent all morning watching soccer.
Yeah. So yeah, we're getting there. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about kind of the finals of the women's soccer league here in the U.S. Some Premier League stuff. We've been consistently talking about racing. Racing's kind of one of the big things that finally picked up and kicked off. But so let's just kind of get into it. So you have been watching the NWSL final. How did that go down?
I have to admit, you were right. Last week, you picked. We were both kind of right. I picked the Chicago Red Stars to win, and you picked the Houston Dash to win, and Houston Dash beat the Chicago Red Stars in the final just now, 2-0. Rachel Daly is the tournament
sized underdog.
the medium-sized underdog. Kind of a big underdog when you consider the fact that they've never made the NWSL playoffs before. And there's only 9 teams in this league, so
yeah.
You would think at some point over the last couple of years they would have snuck in there into the playoffs, but this is their first time and so they came in as the 4 seed and managed to ride, a couple of upsets against the teams ahead of them into the finals, where they took down the Chicago Red Stars and I would say a pretty tough Chicago Red Stars defense. So for a while there, we weren't seeing a whole lot of goals in the playoffs in general. But now I think Houston scoring 2 goals in the finals and then I think a 5-goal thriller in the Red Stars match during the semifinals, I think kind of made up for the lack of scoring earlier on in the tournament.
Yeah. I mean, I think for most people, and this is kind of a thing that is always at some point going to be brought up, like, never look at soccer or even for the most part hockey, any of those sports that kind of align themselves that way, as something where you're going to always see a high amount of goals. Those things are few and far in between. Those things are kind of exceptions to the rule, almost. You have to kind of look at it in a sense of the setups and the plays and all the in-between that happens. That's where the fun of, like, soccer and hockey and those kind of sports are.
Yeah, it's a lot of build-up, but you have to learn to appreciate the build-up. You appreciate the buildup and appreciate the near misses as well, because there's a lot of drama there and there's a lot of tenseness. I was going to say, it's like kind of the gap in between home runs and baseball, but I guess now they're focusing on home runs a lot more, or maybe kind of the gap in between touchdowns. If they took away field goals, then how would you feel about, like, the way the NFL was scored? And
yeah.
So it's a lot of work to get to a goal, but once it happens, then you celebrate like crazy because of all the work you put in. I think this was a nice chance for everybody to get a taste of soccer. And I think this tournament in particular has been, even though this is the extent of the NWSL season this year, I think it got a lot of eyes on the NWSL, and it, they were the first American team sport to return. And I guess now they're the first to finish. And they proved that you can successfully organize a sports league in the COVID era.
Yeah.
It's a small tournament, few games. They don't have to quarantine for that long, but they proved it can be done, and so now it's kind of
The eyes are on.
The eyes are on the other leagues now. But overall, this was organized very well from the beginning. And since they were first, they got a lot of eyes on them. I think this is the league is prime for growth. Again, there are only 9 teams, but we're, in 2 years, we're adding one more to that.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about coming, so not into next season, but in the 2022 season, there is talks, which from the article you linked seem to be pretty solid, of adding a new team, will be called Angel City.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the tentative name right now, but it's the Los Angeles team. So, I feel like most of the teams are kind of. No, I mean, they are kind of scattered out around the country, but getting a team in Los Angeles is a big deal because Los Angeles is a pretty big soccer city. They've got 2 MLS teams. They have a really good youth soccer scene. On top of that, you've got Mexico pretty close. Mm-hmm. A soccer country that is pretty close by. It is a good market for soccer, and this ownership group is.
Yeah. Cause I was going to say, loaded. We don't know necessarily much about the team in itself, but we do know a lot about the owners and investors that are going to be putting money into this football club. So I guess really quick, let's just kind of go down the names of people, because I guess that's kind of what the story is. It's kind of a who's who of A-list celebrities, either in or around the sports world, some from the acting and TV realms, like Natalie Portman is one of the founders in this group. Serena Williams is an investor. So this is like very well led by people who are very spoken out in these kind of things.
And it's a majority women group as well.
There's some weird names in here too that I don't really, really super duper want to get into, but it's a lot of entertainment fluff, which kind of. So this brings a question to mind.
Yeah, go ahead.
Is this going to be one of those things that overall is good for women's soccer to have all of these names now attached to it, or is this going to be something that detracts because it's only going to give news fodder to these names? You know what I mean?
I think most of the names involved, I imagine most of them are just small financial contributors, especially names like, I think they've got like 14 people that are former U.S. women's national team players. Mm-hmm. So I can't imagine that they made very much money back when a lot of these like players like Mia Hamm, Julie Foudy, et cetera, like that. I mean, they were celebrities in their own right. They were pioneers, but at the time they just weren't getting paid just that much at all. Even now, women's soccer players are not being paid that much. They don't have a lot of money to throw at this, but they want to, they want to put like some sort of stake in this. And then the same thing with the actors and stuff. I mean, Natalie Portman probably is the biggest name on this list, and maybe she's made enough money from being a movie star to fund a big chunk of this. Mm-hmm. Alexis Sarhanian is another. I mean, he and Serena Williams, his wife, and their daughter, for some reason, is also a member of this ownership group. There's a lot of money there.
But I think what I more mean in my question is, is this going to be a thing where we hear about it, you know, in sports entertainment, and it's going to be, you know, Angel City, blah, blah, blah. Or is it going to be Serena Williams' soccer team, Natalie Portman's soccer team, you know, like X, whatever the headline is after that? Is it going to be one of these things where the news beat is going to care more about these people, whether, no matter what their involvement is after their investment? Is it going to be one of those things where it detracts or it adds to?
I don't know.
Kaz, I think there's a very simple answer to that question. And it really just comes down to the basic premise of sports. Mm-hmm. If they win, who owns the team really won't be that big of a deal. If they don't win, certain media outlets will probably talk about it. But like with everything else in sports, it comes down to winning.
Yeah, and I think we're seeing this more and more with all these conglomerate groups that are, you know, assembling to purchase teams. Because traditionally, when it came to team ownership, sports team ownership, we're talking like rich white billionaire decides to pick up a plaything on the side, and that plaything just ends up being like a sports team. Mm-hmm. And so like that's how a lot of traditional ownership in in football and baseball and basketball has, you know, and hockey as well in the United States has occurred. And then these are like businessmen that then decided to invest in sports as a hobby. And the level of richness that they have is on a completely different order than the level of richness that athletes and entertainers get paid. That's like a tier below, like an order of 1,000, billionaires versus millionaires type of order. And I think that's why we're seeing a lot more of these groups form, is because you need more millionaires to assemble enough money to buy a team. NWSL teams are, I imagine, still pretty cheap. So that's why I think getting a lot of these people to cobble enough money together to get in on the ground floor of something like this is a little bit easier. That involves like a lot of names being a part of this. I think there's enough names here that like none of them can really overshadow any of the others. And I think we've seen examples of like Derek Jeter and the Miami Marlins, where his name does pop up a lot when talking about the team, but it's like it doesn't seem to overpower the team.
I think in the circles it definitely depends, right? Like obviously as you go, I think no matter what, some of these names get forgotten about. I think it's going to be the realm in which they live. I think it's one of those things, if it gets talked about a lot on the internet, Casey Neistat's name is going to come up a lot, just because that's where that bubble flows. I think if it lives in that press junket of like the TMZs and stuff like that, Serena Williams and Natalie Portman's names are going to come up all of the time, no matter what, just because I think that's how those news outlets kind of depict these things. I think in the ESPN sense and sports outlet sense, I hope to a certain extent these names get forgotten, but obviously those people, because people want to attach some kind of clout to something, right? And I think people are obviously going to fall into the trap of being like, well, if we talk about Serena Williams, if we talk about Natalie Portman, then, you know, it'll get people to think about these things. And
it becomes an SEO thing. And this isn't just any normal soccer team. It's Jessica Chastain's soccer team. It's Mia Hamm's soccer team. There's so many different names to attach to this list. If you want to check it out, check out the link in the show notes. And it's a really long list of people, and But overall, I think this is a good sign that that the league is healthy enough and has enough clout that mm-hmm. it's attracting a ton of investors.
Yeah,
and just having the LA market is going to be amazing. Like I'm excited for my friends that live in LA that can, you know, that now get to take their kids to go see women's soccer professionally. And so I think this is a huge turning point for growth in the league, I think.
Yeah, I just hope this. I hope this goes in the right directions for this, because I do want to see more of this pop up. I do want to see more of these kind of investment groups that I sound like I'm detracting and I sound like I'm being negative about it, but I do want to see more of this pop up. All right, real quick, let's talk about some Premier League things. So the Premier League is it on the final day or
it's where done. Are we at? They play. Okay. On the final Sunday, they play all the games at the same time. Mm-hmm. We're talking like 7 or 8 games, or actually no, 10 games at the same time.
Okay.
And to decide all the final standings. And so nobody's able to take like earlier results from the day and plan out like how they're going to approach later games. It's just you show up and you know you have to get the best result you can. And let the chips fall where they may.
If for anyone listening, right, if you have not really kind of gotten into European soccer and all these things that me and JVZ kind of really, really talked about a lot in the early days of this show, I think kind of that last stretch, if you can find a team that you are willing to watch and pay attention to, whether you watch the games later or stuff like that, those final stretch of days outside of the championship are some of the most exciting because of the fact of things like relegation, right? Which we're going to talk about here in a second. Trying to make sure that you stay not only ahead of the team that you're playing against, but ahead of the other people who are also playing on that day, so that you can, you know, stay ahead of them so that you don't get relegated, is some of the most exciting shit that has ever existed in sports. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about some of the people who are going to be moving down, some of the people who are going to be moving up into like Champions League and stuff like that.
Yeah, so the AFC Bournemouth, Watford, and Norwich City are the three teams that are going to get relegated. Aston Villa, mm-hmm. which I think kind of a mainstay in the Premier League, is safe, but they did not. By the time their game ended, they were basically all watching the scoreboard to see the end of the Watford and Arsenal game to see whether they were going to be safe. And so the bottom three teams get dropped. And then the top two teams from the league below get promoted. And then, for that third spot, they do like a 4-team tournament, to determine the last team that gets promoted. I don't know which three teams are going up yet, but those are the three teams that are going down. Meanwhile, on the top side of the standings, the top four teams qualify for next year's Champions League, and then the next three teams qualify for the Europa League, which is like the second tier European tournament. Liverpool and Manchester City, obviously the top two teams that were so far ahead of everybody else. But then it was kind of a clusterfuck to see who was going to get the last two Champions League spots. And Manchester United and Chelsea managed to nab those last two spots. Leicester City, who played Manchester United today, lost out. And then they'll be joined by Tottenham and Wolverhampton for the three Europa League spots. That's kind of how it's all shaken out. A lot of this was very close because a lot of these teams kind of accumulate the same number of points throughout the season. So then you have tiebreakers with the goal differential and goals scored. So it's kind of a mess, but it's a fun mess to follow throughout the day. And a lot of there's no playoffs here. So, 38 games throughout the course of the season, accumulate as many wins and draws as you can. And then try to finish ahead of everybody else. It's a measure of consistency. If you falter in the middle of the season, then can you recover? I think Manchester United seemed pretty far out of the title picture by Christmas.
Yeah.
And then they've been,
I don't know what's going on over there, but they've been struggling for like the last two or three years, and it's been
weird. They managed to get it together. They were far out of the Champions League spot picture. And then they signed Bruno Fernandes, and all of a sudden Paul Pogba started playing well. I wouldn't have imagined that they would finish in third.
Yeah.
By this point, I figured it would, a couple of weeks ago, it looked like they'd be lucky to finish fourth. So I'm pretty happy about the way they've managed to finish the season. It's good momentum going into next year. And getting a Champions League spot is a big deal because
it is
a ton of TV money that comes from playing in the Champions League. So, and TV money is basically the only way to make money now, without any fans in the stands. getting a Champions League spot is big. And on top of that, it's attractive to signing players as well. Like, players want to be playing in the Champions. Good players from around Europe want to be playing in the Champions League. So if you drop from one of those top four spots, sometimes players will want to leave to go to another team that's playing in the Champions League. So this helps with that. Speaking of the Champions League, this year's Champions League was kind of postponed because of COVID. But now it's going to resume next Friday, August 7th. So I think it was originally going to be aired on the Turner networks, but that's now shifted over to CBS.
Mm-hmm.
So you can check it out there if you want to watch the best teams in Europe duke it out with each other.
All right. So going on from there, we kind of have one of our hot topics of the week, I guess. So we've been talking about the Army and the Navy and other U.S. military forces extending their hand, so to speak, and we'll get into it, into the realm of electronic gaming, competitive gaming, and esports, so to speak, by kind of sponsoring teams, sponsoring events, also having Twitch channels. I think they do have some YouTube channels as well, and even looking into having their own esports teams. Now, this is the thing I will say, right? No matter what, all these things are always, as a person who has had a lot of friends in the armed forces, our producer is a person who has done some time with the U.S. military forces. Everything is always about getting people at some point to think about joining the Army. Okay, there's no way around that. That just is what it is. That's what they do. Everything is an ad platform to them.
Yeah. Their mere presence is a recruitment tool.
Yeah. So with that being said, let's kind of get into the things that these Vice and Kotaku articles talk about, especially with the U.S. Army and then some of the things that the Navy is also doing as well.
Yeah. So they've recently started streaming on Twitch. In particular, the story is about the U.S. Army esports team. They started streaming on Twitch, and then they started banning people because people used their Twitch chat as a means to criticize the U.S. military for war crimes. Normally if you or I ran a Twitch channel, twitch.tv/KingKaz, if you want to watch Kaz, If you go into Kaz's channel and you try to troll him, he can ban your ass. And that's just part of it. You control your own chat room and mm-hmm. You control your own community, and you set the tone for how you want your community to behave. It's different when you are the government, because at that point you have the Constitution, and it becomes a freedom of speech issue if the government is preventing you from being able to speak out about certain things. So,
all right, JVZ. I'm hearing what you're saying, and I'm thinking about this. And during the show, I've been reading this story, and I've been really thinking about it, and it's really given me some pause. As Kaz mentioned, I did serve in the military, and as Kaz said again, a lot of things they do is about recruitment. It's about getting people interested in joining the military. We all understand that. That is established.
Yeah.
When I saw the story about the Twitch channel and the U.S. Army Twitch page banning people, my original thought was, one, Twitch is a private platform owned by Amazon. And I asked the question of, yes, the Army is a government organization under the Department of Defense, but is it really that different from, say, a large event with a really toxic Twitch chat room? Is it really that different? And if one place is using this platform and another is using it at the same time, what's stopping them from regulating their chat rooms the same way?
Yeah, and I think it's the only distinction is that one of those is run by the government, and I do get how nitpicky it sounds to say that, but I think, you know, from a legal perspective, that's where the line is drawn. Functionally, like personally, I'm kind of all for, you know, trying to regulate a toxic chat, but I think when it comes to like freedom of speech and whether the government can control, you know, has some semblance of control over that, I think it becomes a little bit trickier because
I guess what I would ask is it a freedom of speech issue when it is a private platform? Because, for example, if the U.S. Army built their own streaming site with their own money, say usarmygames.com for the sake of argument, if they were to build something like that and then start banning people for saying stuff, I would totally understand where you're coming from, because it would be their own site, their own platform, and it'd be all funded by the Army. However, given that it's on Twitch, we kind of get into a gray area where, the Army is a government organization, but they're not using a publicly funded platform.
Yeah. And I think we get into the same discussions about whether President Donald Trump is allowed to ban people on Twitter from his POTUS account rather than his personal Twitter account, which for some reason he switches back and forth between using. But it's tricky
it's definitely
government
weird
institutions using private platforms to advertise themselves. But every other institution is able to use that private platform and control the message around their platform, but the government can't.
Let's go into some of these other things and criticisms that people have and kind of give some of our thoughts on them. So there's also a thing of Twitch. They were forced by Twitch, I'm going to put quotation marks around that, to stop hosting giveaways that redirected participants to a recruitment web page. There is also some issues and criticisms of bans, kind of some of the same stuff by the Navy or of the Navy for doing kind of some of the same things. The kind of big proponent I also took out of this was view count inflation or view botting, for those that know of those kind of things. That to me is just, that's a big kind of spot of contention and something that is a big problem in streaming platforms in general. So for the somebody like the government to be doing that is or somebody, you know what, for an entity to be doing that, no matter who they are, is just a big no-no. And that is just something that I think that's the thing I latched onto the most was the viewbotting thing. And yeah, because that's just bad. That is just
yeah. I mean, it's bad form. It's unethical. But yeah, I think the rest of it is kind of a gray area. The getting people to try to sign up for a giveaway and then dropping them on a recruiting page, that's shady, but I guess we've seen companies do worse.
And I guess, guys, and this is again where I have to, or I feel like I'm playing devil's advocate a little bit, but I do have some questions about this, because honestly, I just don't really see the problem with recruiting. I just don't see the issue with that.
Yeah.
Especially when the DOD is pretty transparent about it. And everyone knows what they're doing. If you click a link that goes to a recruitment page, especially if it's from a military organization, you kind of have an understanding of what they're doing.
Yeah. And I think...
Well, I think the issue is that they thought they were entering a giveaway, and instead they got dropped on a recruitment page, which I think it was... They were... The Army claims that by clicking the link, they did enter the giveaway, but it wasn't like the page they got dropped on was not like a, hey, you've been entered into this giveaway. The page they got dropped on was just a straight recruitment page. So it made it look like they were being redirected when it was kind of, they got automatically entered, but then redirected.
Okay.
So it looks worse than it is. And it was, you know, it's like you got a ride home from somebody, and then during the entire time they just started recruiting you. You still got your ride home, but you had to listen to somebody try to recruit you the whole time.
Yeah, but there's also the thing of, you know, is it? Hey, I'll give you $1,000. You know what I mean? Oh, but, or is it? Hey, if you listen to this spiel about
a timeshare,
then you can stay here for free. You just got to listen to me try to get you to buy it. You know what I mean? It's I think it's
the realm it wasn't in which you that. Presented. It wasn't quite that, because I think everybody did get entered, but it was just the way it looked made it look like the entering the recruitment process was a requirement for the giveaway when it wasn't. And I think they needed to make that a little bit more clear. So they got a lot of criticism for that. To your point, DJM, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has kind of spoken out against this and drafted an amendment to the U.S. House Appropriations Bill to prevent the military from trying to advertise on Twitch streaming and esports platforms. I think this is kind of aimed at the fact that, oh, these are impressionable youth that are involved in gaming. So,
and I guess that is where that's another big contention point for me in all of this. I asked the question of, one, it's recruiting. Like, the military is going to recruit. They're going to use the defense budget to recruit. It's just going to happen. It's part of the machine. And two, it's already been well documented that, like the other major sports and competitions, especially with colleges, the armed forces compete in competitive gaming. And if they want to do that as part of their recruiting, I guess I'm having a hard time seeing what the issue is.
I think for me, and I think right now, I think the same answer to everything else that is happening in our country is it's a political season, and people are going to look for almost any and everything to make it a hot button issue. And I think one, that's kind of what Kotaku and Vice are doing here. They're kind of pointing out the most extreme parts of these things. I think in general, I think the thing that would make pretty much everyone happy, and I go for this across the board. I said this when I watched a lot of my friends get recruited into the army, and this is back in the 90s and early aughts, where there were recruitment dudes standing outside of skate parks and basketball courts, like just yeah. legitimately. I think it is the openness in which you do it, right? I have no problem with the army looking at what the kids are into and then trying to use that to get kids to look at, you know, military service. I just think it is the way and the realm in which you present it and how open you are about your intentions, right? Because obviously every time one of my friends got recruited, they always, like, this was a thing in the early 2000s. You would go, you would listen to this guy spiel, and then they would be like, hey, next time you come back and talk to us, bring a friend with you. I was always the friend. Because I was very much a I'm not doing that kind of person.
I did not bring any of my friends.
Some of those guys, very open and honest. Like, hey, look, here's the thing. You know, I got to get a however many people into this office a day just to hear the spiel. Whatever. Some of those guys were fucking car salesmen. And, you know, and it's the tactics you use or whatever. But if you're open and you're honest about it, and I think everybody knows what your intentions are at the end of the day, I think it's fine. You know what I mean? Because I am a person, I enjoy advertising. I enjoy all those kind of things. I like marketing. And that's all this really is. But it's how you go about it. If you're kind of sneaky and shady, it seems weird.
but we talked about a story in the past about the military getting into esports, specifically because there are a lot of games that are, you know, shooter based, and mm-hmm. so they're like, okay, if you like this stuff, if you like tactics, if you like all that, then maybe this is a potential career for you. So like when it came to subject matter, it was kind of a natural fit, much better than say football is. They used to spend a bunch of money recruiting in college football, paying for all these expensive flyovers and stuff. And so like I would much rather have them spending my tax dollars on this than spending it on, you know, getting jets to fly over a stadium for 2 seconds during a national anthem. And I think it does depend on how brazen they are. Sometimes, like whenever you go to a basketball game and you see, you know, one of those special like reunion type of things where, you know, they blindfold somebody, they haven't competed into a contest, and then they actually reveal that their prize is their husband back from Iraq, you know, and it tugs on your heartstrings and then that's super emotional. And I don't know. I've always felt like that is a recruiting tool. Your tax dollars are being used to pay for that event to happen right in front of you as a recruitment tool for the military. Even as nice as it sounds, as emotional as you get watching it, it is kind of a tug on your heartstrings thing to pull you into the military. I think what they're doing here is more above board than that. I would even say that stuff is not above board. It's just a more subtle form of advertising. And I'm all for, you know, more overt forms of advertising and being upfront with, you know, the You know, because the military is a potential career for a lot of people, or a potential stepping stone to a career in something else. But, you know, like DJM said, his recruiter was open about it, and he has no student loans to pay off, like a lot of people that went different routes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so he got something out of it. I'm sure some of your friends, Kaz, got something out of it as well. Yeah. It's a potential avenue.
I forgot about this until we recently started talking about this. One of the kind of first FPS games as a big FPS shooter person that I got into is a game called America's Army, which is produced by the Army, which is literally the biggest recruitment tool that they have.
You played America's Army?
Bro, I played out of that game, because it actually is a decent FPS game. And I played the shit out of it. And you have to, even get into that game, you have to look at a recruitment website, and you have to go through the fake basic training that that game will put you through to show you and simulate what basic training is like. And I did all of that just so I could play that game. Never joined the Army. And I knew what I was getting into when I played that game. But it's just one of those things. That game was a very open and honest thing about what it wanted to do. It wanted to show you kind of this weird, silly simulation of the what the Army is like in the best light. And it did that, but it didn't pull me in. You know what I mean? So it's how you go about it.
Hey, what's up, everybody? DJM here. We had a bit of a technical burp during the end of the recording as the podcast was saving, and a little bit of the audio got lost here when I saved the podcast, going from the story about the Army recruiting into the next story, which was about Mike Tyson getting back into the ring to go 8 rounds in an exhibition fight against Roy Jones Jr., and we're going to pick up right from there. Right now,
getting back into shape in the boxing, and everybody started to ask the question, looking at a lot of this, like, oh, is he actually, you know, is this just him getting in shape, or is he actually going to step into the ring? Here's the answer to that. He's actually going to step into the ring. And while I think there is a slew of fighters currently that I would love to see Mike Tyson fight, I think this, for some weird realm, is like the most perfect thing. He's going to be fighting Roy Jones Jr. In an 8-round exhibition match. This is just something that, like, I don't think my brain is still processing this card. Like,
yeah. So Tyson is 54. He's old enough that, like, he's reached the George Foreman zone, where like people know Foreman more for the grill than they do for his boxing.
Yeah.
And so Tyson is like more movie star now than, well, actually I mean, I feel like for the kids these days, he's more movie star than he is boxer. Roy Jones Jr. is still like heavily involved in the boxing scene. He was a commentator for a while. And, so it's not surprising that he's still kind of around the sport. He's still fit. And him and Tyson in the ring together. I mean, that's certainly a matchup I never thought I'd ever see. Mm-hmm. It's going to be an exhibition, so it'll be fun. I think they're not putting on like the head pads or anything, but I think they're using, I think, 10-ounce gloves.
But these are also, I think it's one of those things, and I think you could pick a lot of other names from the history of boxing who are still around, right? And you could say, hey, these guys are going to fight in an exhibition match. And you could look at it and be like, okay, that's cool. There might be some moments or whatever. In my mind, these are two guys who are very, when they were in their prime, and I'll put quotation marks around that because of a lot of the things Mike Tyson said in the interview that led up to this, in their prime, you put these guys in a ring and they want to win, and they're both very competitive just naturally as people. So it's this thing that, looking at this, I think for me, being a boxing fan, especially of the era that these two guys come from, I automatically assume that this is going to be a fight because these are two guys who were always very highly competitive, and I can't really see them kind of doing this and then one of them not really, really wanting to win. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
they're going to try to knock each other out. It's it's a little worrying because they're both in their 50s. So like they could get seriously hurt from this, but at the same time, it's two boxing megastars, both spectacles in their own weight divisions, and that like never really, you know, one was a light heavyweight, the other one was a heavyweight, and so like they were never really in each other's spheres.
Yeah.
But I guess now in retirement they're kind of closer in weight, closer in closer in athleticism, since they're both old. So it might be more of an even matchup. Just the spectacle of this is worth watching on its own. Like even more so than the Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor fight from a couple years ago.
I'm all in on this.
Even like all safety concerns and other things aside, this is just too much of a spectacle for me to ignore. DJM says the same thing. He's unapologetically here for this. And he wants, you know, Max Kellerman and Joe Tessitore on this call. He wants this needs to be like full on paper. Like if this was a full on pay-per-view event, then it would sell pretty high. It might sell more than a lot of current fighters, in boxing today. So it's going to be a spectacle, and it's going to be enough of a spectacle that even the undercard is a bit of a spectacle as well. Cause Jake Paul, apparent YouTube star, I keep forgetting that there's two of them. Jake Paul, one of the Paul brothers, and former NBA player Nate Robinson are going to fight each other. Jake Paul has apparently been boxing for the last couple years, and in a way, I think he's cultivated a personality where people hate him, and then now he's capitalizing off of the fact that people hate him by getting people to pay to watch other people try to punch him, but also training so that he can survive that environment. So this will be Nate Robinson's first fight. Nate Robinson is kind of known for being one of the shorter players in NBA history, even though he's a perfectly average sized human being. But just in the NBA, that's 5'9" is kind of small.
Yeah.
So at least like weight wise, he's kind of a match. And I guess they've been feuding. So that's add that spectacle to the spectacle that is Tyson and Roy Jones Jr., who were two spectacles in their own right. And this is, it's going to be a pretty strange event at the very least. September 12th is when this is going to happen, at Dignity Health Sports Park in Carson, California. I think that's where the Galaxy play. I have trouble keeping track because they changed the name to that building like every 3 months, but I think that's the old Home Depot Center / that might be where the Chargers play too, or played until the new stadium opens up. But at one of those places in Carson, California is where this is going to happen. So we'll see we'll see whether one of them gets injured in the lead up to training, because that is a very distinct possibility since these guys are in their 50s. Whether they can stay healthy and whether this 8-round spectacle will be worth all the hype that we're building for it.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it'll be something interesting. All right, let's talk a little bit about baseball. Let's kind of move through this. So the baseball season has started. Juan Soto tested positive.
On opening day. We didn't even get to the very first game before a high profile player tested positive for COVID. This is like hours before the Yankees were set to play the Washington Nationals. The interesting thing about this was, like, Soto tested positive, but they didn't do anything to the rest of the Washington Nationals team that he's supposedly been around for the last couple days. So hopefully none of the other, I mean, these players are getting tested frequently. So hopefully none of the other players test positive, and hopefully we don't have to look back and wonder why the Nationals, the entire Nationals team didn't get quarantined from this. But yeah, there's already questions right off the bat about how well this is going to hold up. This isn't the same as the NWSL where they had a bubble. This isn't the same as the NBA where they've got a bubble, or the WNBA or the NHL. So it's just open play and hope the players stay healthy and stay COVID free. But yeah, games are in full swing for the last couple of days. The baseball season has started, 60 games for every team, and yeah, it'll be a short season, but maybe one of the more interesting ones in a long time. Just to skip a couple of these stories and then come back to them later, but the playoffs are actually going to expand this year. They also decided this on opening day, just to everybody's surprise. I don't know why they waited this long to announce this, but they're expanding the playoffs to 16 teams. So in each division, the top two teams are going to qualify. And then, in each conference, there's going to be two wild cards. So 8 teams per conference. The first round is going to be just 3 games, and all of them are going to be played at the home of the higher seed team. So like no tiebreaker games or anything like that. They're trying to balance out the fact that they've added more games by taking away some of the less meaningful games. And just to try to minimize the amount of travel that some of these teams have to do as well. So if you minimize travel, then you minimize the risk of getting COVID. So for the first time, we're going to see more than half the league make the playoffs. There's actually a decent possibility that no division winners are going to make the second round of the playoffs. That is a possibility with the way this playoff structure works out. So that'll be interesting to see. There's a lot more randomness, which I think is why they wanted to expand the playoffs to allow more teams in, to account for the fact that a 60-game regular season is not as definitive about which teams are the best and which teams aren't deserving of a playoff spot versus a 162-game season.
Yeah.
So they've expanded the field, and I don't know, this year's World Series champion will be able to say that they are better than 15 other playoff teams rather than just 9 other teams. All right. Couple tidbit items. Alyssa Nakin becomes the first female coach in an MLB game ever when she took the field during the late innings of an exhibition game for the Giants against the A's. She was the first base coach for a little bit, so that is a nice milestone knocked over, and hopefully we see more women coaching in baseball in general. Rather than just being relegated to softball. So nice milestone for her. Mookie Betts, who was recently traded to the Dodgers this offseason, has now signed a long-term deal. 12 years, $365 million, which is massive. may not seem that massive compared to some of the contracts that we've talked about recently, but this is a huge deal. And the interesting thing about this deal is that the contract ends in 2032, but yeah. There's a bunch of money that has been deferred to pay out later than that. So he's getting paid until the year 2044 by like $8 to $10 million a year, every year after that. So that's a really interesting way to structure a contract. This isn't quite a Bobby Bonilla deal because Bobby Bonilla stretched a $5 million deal into something much bigger because of interest. So Mookie Betts isn't getting interest on this, but it's just deferred payment. And even though inflation is going to cause that $8 to $10 million to be worth a little bit less in present day dollars, I think he's okay with that. But if he does get traded, then he gets paid out all of that, I think, immediately. So I think he's basically nailed down his future for the next 12 years. On top of that, he's going to donate $100,000 a year to charity and get a hotel suite on road trips. So he's managed to negotiate that into his contract.
The donation thing was cool, and then when I read the hotel suite thing, I was like, now you're just padding down. now you're just piling on.
You get what you can get, especially now that the hotel life is so important,
yeah,
due to COVID. Like, it's good to nail something like this down.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, COVID is affecting a lot of these contract negotiations, not just, you know, because it gives players an opportunity to ask for a couple other things. But also, like, it becomes kind of important to nail down contracts in the COVID era, just because you don't know how the lack of fans, the lack of money from fans being able to pay to go see these games is going to affect revenue going forward. So I guess let's seamlessly move into football talk, because the NFL Players Association and the NFL have kind of reached an agreement on how they're going to play out this season. Not just how they're going to play out this season, but how they're going to spread out that loss in revenue over the next couple of years, because it's going to affect the salary cap. And when it affects the salary cap, it affects how much players can sign for, how big the contracts they can get. Over the next 4 years or so, they've decided that, you know, it's only going to be like a 12% reduction in the salary cap, and they're going to spread it over the next 4 years instead of just trying to take all the hits this year. So everything is going to remain relatively unchanged this year. This also gives teams a chance to plan going forward. The important thing is, if somebody gets a medical opt out for COVID this year, they get $350,000. And they don't get paid like their normal contract, but they get $350,000 and their contract gets delayed by a year. And then if they're opting out voluntarily, if they don't get a medical exemption, then they get $150,000 instead. And then the contract will still get delayed a year. Ultimately, they'll still get paid out what they negotiated on their contracts. But they get some sort of payout to kind of hold them over. I think most of us could do just fine on $150,000 a year. This was a nice compromise for them that they've managed to nail down. All the stuff that we were talking about, the players complaining about last week, they've basically sorted out all those issues. I think the players complaining last week was just kind of a wake up call to say, hey, the season is getting close, we need to work this shit out. And so they did.
Let's talk about one of the other big things in here. So that's the players who test positive in violation of prohibited activities will not be paid for games missed.
Yeah. So if you say, I don't know, go to a strip club or something and get COVID, then that's just you being reckless. So. So then the league shouldn't continue to pay you because you were reckless. And not only are you being reckless and jeopardizing yourself, but you're also jeopardizing your teammates as well. So, so that's, I think that's a strong disincentive to do that. So that kind of helps the fact that, right, they're not going to be playing in a bubble. So, so you want with, over, you know, 100 different personnel around a team every year, and 32 teams, that's a lot of people that can fuck this up for everybody if somebody tests positive, and if somebody tests positive and spreads it to other people. So this is just a small little incentive to make it so if a player ruins it for everybody, they get some sort of penalty themselves too.
So let's talk about people just trying to keep it the same old status quo. Jamal Adams is going to be traded from the Jets to the Seahawks after pretty much doing the norm, talking shit about your team and shit about your coach and any media outlet that will hear you. But, you know, let's look at it, I guess. So Seattle will get Adams and a 2022 fourth round pick. The Jets on their end are going to be receiving a 2021, a 2022 first round pick, and a 2021 third round pick for Adams. But yeah, like I said, he kind of did the norm that you do when you are fed up with your team. You just,
yeah.
Anybody with a mic? All right, let me talk shit.
Yeah, he definitely burned his bridges, and to him, I think it's I think he certainly feels like it's justified because I think promises were made to him about whether he was either going to get a long-term deal or he's still on his rookie contract right now. So either he was going to get a long-term deal from the Jets or they were going to trade him, and the team did neither of those things. So so he felt betrayed and to the point where he felt like the relationship was not going to be repaired with the Jets. And so he also really did not like his head coach, Adam Gase. And so he trashed him in a newspaper interview. Now he's been traded to the Seahawks, and the Seahawks are kind of trying to rebuild their defense, and adding an all-pro safety like Jamal Adams is a pretty key piece to that, enough that they were willing to part with two first round picks and a third round pick. The Seahawks are in win now mode. It's as long as Russell Wilson is around, this is their championship window. So they got to put the pieces around him that they can. So draft picks are less of a priority to them than getting players that can help them win now. And Adams is still a very young player. Like I said, he's still on his rookie contract, and I guess they get to decide whether they are the ones that will pay him a massive extension or not. But if he balls out for them this year, then I'm sure that will be an easier decision to make. But yeah, the NFC West this year is going to be a goddamn clusterfuck between the Seahawks and the 49ers, who were already very close last year. It's just a goddamn arms race between those two teams. And on top of that, the Cardinals are only getting better. And the Rams are only a couple years removed from a Super Bowl appearance. So it's going to get nasty. And yeah. I'm, as a 49ers fan, I'm not happy about this, but
maybe it's one of
according
those
to both teams' priorities. I think this was a good move for both sides. This is a tremendous haul for the Jets for a guy who didn't want to be there. So that's
I'm not going to get into my shit about the Jets. Let's talk about another team that has a lot of shit going on around it, and that is the former Washington Redskins. They have announced this week that for this season they would like to be known as the Washington football team.
I've been calling them that this entire time for the last 3 or 4 years. And so I spoke it into existence. I'm taking credit for this.
That is as stated by their head marketing manager and executive vice president, that is not necessarily the direction that they're going to be going in the future. This is a placeholder. The things that they're going to obviously be doing is removing the previous logo and things of the Redskins. For right now, as it'll be known, they will be the Washington football team. With the established year logo. They will be keeping the burgundy and gold color scheme. They will be removing the previous logo from player helmets and uniforms and replacing those with player numbers for the time being. Very, very college-esque kind of styling, very old school kind of thing, which could be kind of cool and in the end might be the thing they're going with. But as they said, this is a total rebranding. It is going to take time. Their color quote is they want to involve all the fans, business partners, and alum in the process. And that takes time. This is going to be a total rebranding. A lot of that process can sometimes take 12 to 18 months if you want to do it right. You have to take a deep breath, take a step back, and go through the process.
It's the ESPN article that we've linked has kind of a picture of how the jersey looks, and I mean, it doesn't look a whole lot different. It's kind of like they just took the logo away and just stuck a number there instead, which is fine. Like,
this is a momentary thing, right?
Yeah, it's a placeholder, and it's not stopping them from selling these placeholders as merchandise, but it is a placeholder.
They still kind of pseudo want to come up with something else, so to speak, but it's also probably a testing ground to see how this fares for them and then see where it goes from there.
I just want to say one thing about the Washington football team. Given everything that we know now, I just want to say that it breaks my heart as the resident Robert Griffin III stan to realize he never had a chance in Washington. He never had a chance. It was doomed from the start, given that organization.
I think sometimes you see somebody leave an organization and go somewhere else and thrive. And Griffin hasn't quite had the chance to do that yet, but it's a lot of
his stuff was also injuries and things like that too. There was just a lot,
which I think was also down to, that there was some organizational stuff that led to some of those injuries as well. So the organization matters, and if an organization is rotted, that starts from the top down. So maybe this rebrand helps, maybe it doesn't, maybe this shouldn't distract from the fact that, from the big sexual harassment story that was released a couple, I think that we talked about in the last episode or the episode before. Even if the team is strategically timed these in order to do that, I guess this is like an okay story. This is a what took you so long type of story. I guess the one good story that came out this week is that Alex Smith is actually fully healed and cleared to play NFL football again. So I think after a really horrific injury that took place, I think in the middle of that we covered in the middle of recording the show, to the point where that injury nearly killed him and affected the way he walked since then. And it's been a long rehab process, but I think he's at the point now where he can at least physically play football again. Whether he's athletic enough to keep up with other players, I don't know, but we'll see. So that's at least one good story to come out of Washington football.
Yeah, all right. So let's move on from that. Let's talk about a little bit of hockey news and get through the rest of these things. So we've been talking about this. There was a lot of talk of Seattle getting their own MLS, or I mean, not MLS, NHL team. And that has come through to fruition. And we have our team. We have the name. We have the logo. We have the jerseys. We have the color scheme, all that stuff. And I will say, before I say anything else, I am feeling it.
Yeah, this is so like it. This is what the Washington football team should hope to achieve. Yeah. This kind of reaction with their rebranding, because I think I read something where like the owner of this Seattle team didn't even know what the hell a Kraken was when he found out that like the fans wanted to name the team the Kraken, but he listened, and you know, and then he got his people on it, and they, you know, they did their market research and all that, and then they decided, yeah, let's name it the Kraken. They found a couple ties between, you know, you know, one of the largest giant octopuses in the world lives in Puget Sound, which is right by Seattle, which is, you know, Puget Sound is the origin of the name of like the Seattle Supersonics and the Seattle Sounders. Like their other teams are sea related, with like the Mariners and the Seahawks. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, I like the way that like all the Seattle teams are kind of, they kind of have names that go together. So it's, you know, it's like kind of a unified city image. And then, you know, having the Kraken on top of that, I mean, it's a fun little pop culture thing, but at the same time, it's something that the city has gotten behind. It was one of the team names that the fans wanted, and on top of that, they did a fantastic job of designing the logos and the color scheme, and the way the jerseys look.
There's so much of it that is just very, like, from a design standpoint, it is just so very well done, right? The if you go on over to their Twitter page, the Seattle Kraken at NHL Seattle, they have their reveal trailer, right? And it kind of incorporates just enough of the history of hockey in Seattle in two slides, with talking about the, like, you get the presence of Seattle being a water facing city, showing all the ports and things like that, and it kind of gives you that mystery of the Kraken, something lurking below the deep. There's a lot to it there, and it's very well done. The logo is so goddamn clean. The S,
like that, it's like that S thing that you learned how to draw in elementary school, but
a little tentacle going through the middle. So freaking well done. And then adding the anchor as the secondary, and then the stylized word markings.
Not just the anchor, but like the middle of the anchor is actually the Space Needle. So it's city landmark right in the middle of your logo that blends in seamlessly. Yes. This is
peak design here, folks.
It's not a rebrand, it's an initial branding, but like this is like they nailed it. So I think tons of people are excited. People are buying merch already. Everybody's excited about the NHL in Seattle now. So so when they join the league, I think next year, this will be you know, they've already got a bunch of season ticket deposits. It'll be probably as successful, if not more successful, than the Las Vegas Golden Knights. Probably hockey wise, they won't be as successful as the Golden Knights were, because it's pretty hard to make the Stanley Cup final in your first year. But
you don't know what they'll do. We got to see what happens when they get out onto the ice. But no, this is just super exciting, right? So the NHL in the last 4 or 5 years has added these two teams, and so far the one team they added has definitely added something to the NHL, coming in being kind of just right off of the back one of the best teams. But yeah, this is just I think this is just great. This just adds more to the sport that I always say I'm going to watch and never get around to it. But I mean, I still love hockey, and this is just great. So,
and if this does get you excited about hockey, this Saturday, August 1st is when the NHL season returns for their extended playoffs. So, so give that a watch.
Heck yeah.
All right. Basketball is back.
Yeah.
The WNBA is back in full swing. I got to watch, well, I tried to. I did sign up for WNBA League Pass, and blackouts made it really difficult for me to watch the games I wanted to watch. But I managed to find a stream for Sabrina Ionescu's debut against Seattle, which she struggled a little bit. But trying to debut against a rejuvenated Seattle team with both Sue Bird and Breonna Stewart back. This is basically the championship team from 2 years ago. So that's a tough team to make your debut against. It's just kind of a welcome to the league moment for one of the most highly anticipated rookie debuts in a long time. The interesting thing about the WNBA draft is that there aren't a whole lot of busts at the number one overall pick. So, these players play for 4 years in college, and there isn't that much. There isn't as big of like an athletic gap between the WNBA and women's college basketball. So I fully expect her to make the adjustment, and so it'll be fun to watch. This is another shortened season. So we'll see how this goes. Meanwhile, I think we talked about the Sparks and the LA Sparks and the Washington Mystics losing a bunch of their players.
Yeah.
And they still ended up coming out and kicking the shit out of the teams they played yesterday. So I think it's like what we were saying with Elena Deladon. Like you lose a star, and that creates a big vacuum for other people to step up and become stars. And that's basically what's happening here. So, that losing a star sucks, but that's an opportunity to create new stars. So that's happened then. Don't make bad decisions to try to hold on to the stars that you have. Let them make their own decisions for their own health. All right, moving on to the NBA, we're kind of in the middle of the exhibition games. It's kind of, it's preseason, but it's not really preseason because it's preseason in the middle of the season. One of the interesting stories to come out of preseason is Becky Hammond making her NBA coaching debut. The Spurs are kind of rotating their assistants and letting them coach games while Greg Popovich kind of sits on the sidelines and acts as an assistant. Since he's old, he's wearing a mask and trying to protect himself as much as possible. So he's letting somebody else go out there and scream out instructions to the players. Becky Hammond, finally got her shot. We'll see. Hopefully more opportunities for her in the future. I think we were a little bit worried that she would end up as the coach of the Knicks. And it looks like that's not happening by the way, Adrian Wojnarowski is back now, and he's reporting that Tom Thibodeau is about to sign a 5-year deal with the Knicks. How do you feel about that, Kaz?
I don't fucking even care, man. It's the Knicks is where you go because you have nothing better to do with your fucking time.
It's this is going to be 5 years of his time, or at least they're going to be paying him for 5 years.
It's a money dump. They're going to pay him for a year and a half, and then they're going to go in a different direction again.
Yeah. And the thing is, he's not a bad coach. There's issues with his coach. He's apparently a very good coach when it comes to player development. Unfortunately, that also comes along with playing those players for an absurd amount of minutes per game. and running them into the ground. But you know, he's helped develop guys like Jimmy Butler and Derrick Rose, and I think he can take a little bit of credit for some of the player development in Minnesota during his short time there.
But
obviously that didn't end quite so well. But the Knicks paying Tom Thibodeau this year or this upcoming season will make it so that the Wolves don't have to pay him for that upcoming season, because they gave him such a massive contract. So he's leaving his cushy ESPN job and now coming back into the coaching realm. Maybe this is the right coach for the Knicks for developing guys like RJ Barrett. It'll be interesting. It'll be another wait and see, but it sounds like it'll be a very frustrating process for you.
It just kind of adds to the fact that like it makes it look like they're not really trying to do anything, right? When you
go out and get somebody that's already coached before and been fired by a couple teams before.
Yeah, and especially somebody who kind of gets a lot more criticism, and like you said, right, all of his criticism isn't probably the fairest, but when you kind of go after these guys who are constantly being criticized about the things that they do, right, which always just, I don't know, it just looks bad. Like, it just looks bad. It looks like you're not doing your research on these people enough. It looks like you're just going with it because it's a name to go with. Right. You didn't get Becky Hamm, which would have been like this gleaming light on the Knicks. You got somebody that instantly, I think instantly when you say that name, you're just like, right. It makes you start like it literally
like once you say Tom Thibodeau, like half your players all of a sudden they're like their hamstrings start tightening up like just in advance.
Because but I just mean like as a fan, it's one of those things you see that scrolling past on Twitter or wherever else, and it instantly makes you go and Google who else was available. Right. You're just like, was there no one else?
Yeah,
like,
nobody would come here.
Right. So I don't know, man. All right. Let's get through some of these last couple of things.
We talked about LeBron's efforts to the More Than a Vote coalition that he's forming to try to help with voting rights. And so I think one thing we said when that happened was like LeBron's efforts usually put their money where their mouth is, and I think this is a pretty early example of that. They're already they're donating $100,000 to the Florida Rights Coalition, or sorry, Florida Rights Restoration Coalition, which is an organization. Like recently in Florida, they voters voted for an initiative to allow felons to have their felons who have been released from prison to have their voting rights restored. You know, these are people that have done their time, and so the idea being, you know, there's no reason that a felony conviction should result in you getting your voting rights taken away. Like you are still a person, you still have a voice. If you're an American citizen, then that still should qualify you to vote. So that was what was decided by the Florida voters. And then the government kind of stepped in and said, okay, this is what the voters wanted, but we're going to attach on some caveats to that. And if there are fees or fines associated with the original felony conviction, then you have to pay them off, even though these people have done their time in the prison system. So surprisingly, that was kind of held up by the Supreme Court, even though that is technically a poll tax. So I think, you know, now that the law has not been a great avenue for that, now this, Florida Rights Restoration Coalition has stepped in to try to pay these fines so that these Floridians that have that want to get their voting rights restored that are otherwise eligible without these fees and fines to be able to register to vote, so that they can pay them off and get the right to vote restored to them. Mm-hmm. And so already this organization is doing things, and that didn't really take long. It's only been like a month since we first talked about it. So, it's good to see that pay off already. All right. Last story kind of broke towards the end of the week. Yeah, definitely a story for NBA Twitter to run wild on.
Yeah.
Lou Williams, Clippers guard. The Clippers are one of the contenders in the West this year, along with the Lakers. And I think earlier in the year, we kind of said it was either going to be the Lakers, the Clippers, or the Bucks winning the title this year. And so the Battle of Los Angeles was a big part of it. Lou Williams is a key piece to that. He's the reigning sixth man of the year. And he got a special permission to leave the NBA bubble to go to a funeral in Atlanta on Friday. So he traveled from Orlando to Atlanta. Thursday night, he was caught in an Instagram post by rapper Jack Harlow from the Magic City Strip Club in Atlanta Thursday night. And then Harlow immediately deleted the post and tried to claim that it was an old photo, even though Lou Williams was wearing a mask that he got from inside the NBA bubble in the photo. And so now the excuse has shifted from this was an old photo to we did go there, but we only went there to pick up food.
Look, there is no reason ever in history that you are enjoying food at a strip club. Okay. There's just, well, let's just not, I don't care.
Wrong. I don't Cass, care. If, wrong. Wrong.
No.
I have heard for years that the food at Magic City in Atlanta is outstanding. I've heard that for years.
And that has apparently been a lot of the talk since the story broke, that like Magic City actually does have fantastic food. And on top of that, like Lou Williams is documented, long before this incident, years ago, talking about how Magic City was his favorite place to eat in his hometown of Atlanta. So, so this was kind of a thing where like he and his friends were at a viewing, and then they went to go get food. And I guess the place that they always go get food is Magic City. Now the question is like, did they hang out there? Did they get a couple lap dances or whatever, or did they just go in and grab food and leave? And,
they were there long enough to take pictures with rappers.
They were there long enough to take selfies. And, Jack Harlow, the rapper, was with the party. I'm not up on the hip hop scene, so I'm kind of just identifying these people by name, but, he was a part of the group that went there. So it wasn't like, Lou Williams showed up and met up with a bunch of rappers that were there. I think Lou Williams is trying to say like, oh, I wasn't partying out at a strip club. I was just going to get dinner. At least that's his excuse. That's not really going to fly though. The NBA is still slapping him with a 10-day quarantine. That's going to miss two games of this abbreviated 8-game restart season, and one of those games is against the Lakers.
You guys have given me enough benefit of the doubt, but I think I agree with the 10-day fucking.
Yeah, I think
10-day wrist slap
is the. Other players have been given permission to leave. I think his teammate mm-hmm. Montrezl Harrell had to go take care of his grandmother, so he left. Zion Williamson also, which this entire bubble is designed for, he was allowed to leave, but apparently he's been tested every day throughout his departure. And so he's able to come back. And then I think with just only a couple days of quarantine, he can be released. He doesn't have to do the full 10-day thing because he kind of went through the whole process. He was above board. He was upfront about everything, about like what he was going to be doing and how safe he was going to be. But yeah, the strip club thing caught everybody by surprise. And, you know, instead of just ordering food for delivery, he went out to a public place. And
did you have to go in? Did they not have curbside? I'm just
or saying. Could they not send one person to go pick it up and instead? And did they all have to go?
It was
at the very least, at least a little bit irresponsible, even if he wasn't out there partying. So that little bit of irresponsibility puts the rest of the Clippers team in jeopardy. It puts any team that the Clippers play against in jeopardy. Even if you just want some wings, we talked about Rashawn Holmes last week crossing the quarantine line to get a Postmates, and it is confirmed he went to go get wings.
There's some good wings. I have a mighty taste for wings today too.
That is a noble cause, but you still got to follow the rules.
Yeah.
So because the rules exist.
Why is it safe? Why isn't someplace like Buffalo Wild Wings sponsoring the NBA bubble now?
Yes, they absolutely should. And it was. I know it took a lot of effort to organize this to where it is, but it really is a tremendous oversight that they didn't get somebody like that to come in and you know, provide wings, provide the kind of foods that everybody wants to eat. The kind of temptations that would normally cause them to leave the bubble, bring the temptations in-house.
Gordo Ramsay out there every day just cooking for the NBA. It gives you a press line, gives you kind of things.
I guess,
it don't hit the same.
Like us, I feel like Disney food should be good enough, but Disney World food should be good enough, but
no.
But they're going to be there for a long time. They do need some variety, and yeah. I mean, yeah, this needs to be like cafeteria day when you're kids, and you know, you get pizza on Friday, and everybody's excited about that. So like, you know.
Friday, you have Gordon Ramsay. Looking next Friday, Buffalo Wild Wings. The Friday after that, Papa John's. But, you know, the new Papa John's where Shaq is at the home.
Not the old Papa John's. Not the old racist one. And, they should be doing stuff like that. And I don't know, like, if they want strippers, like, maybe you get strippers too. Like,
okay, all right, hold on. Now the strippers have to be in a bubble.
Right. No, yeah. You like test them. You pay them a lot of money for their time and their effort that they have to go through to do it. But, you know, and make it voluntary. But, you know, that's been identified as one of the biggest threats to the bubble. So, you know, maybe you can head that off at the pass. As long as everything is above board.
We do.
All right, with that,
ender for the ages, ladies and gentlemen. there's no more I can say about that. This has been a media
4000ends.com, because we talked about a lot of stories today, and we've got links to all of them in the show notes. Patreon.com/4000ends if you want to support this show financially. Hit me up on Twitter. I'm at JVZ. Kaz is at King Kaz. DJM is at Call Me DJM. Thank you all for listening, and we will see you next time.